How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hello, everybody. Hello, boys, girls, men, women, dogs, cats, dragons, horses. Everybody who's come to listen to us talk about the latest episode of House of the Dragon, Episode 7, The Red Sewing. We have a question in the comments already from Chris. Someone asked what the title is. It's The Red Sewing. And I know there are a lot of opinions about that already. We're here every week to talk about this stuff. And I see all of you having disparate opinions. And I feel like the narrative on the season of House of Dragon has turned a little bit. But I am definitely been enjoying it more these past episodes. And I enjoyed this one quite a bit, too. The Red Sewing. We have dragon seats happening. We have people coming to Dragonstone to ride dragons. I love the last scene. I liked a lot of the characters before that. I have some problems with the season, but we'll get into that a little later. Daniel Roman. You are Daniel Roman. I am Dan Selke, both at winterscoming.net. What did you think of The Red Sewing?
True things all. Hi, everyone in the chat. Great to see you all here. Hope you enjoyed the episode. So I liked it a lot. I won't lie, my first watch of it, because I've seen this episode, I want to say like four times in the past 48 hours. I've watched it a lot of times. I have seen it a fair few times. And my first watch of it, there were plot points that I felt like moved really quick. Like I wanted more of some things like Adam of Hall and Corlys Velaryon. I wanted maybe a little bit less of Alicent Hightower, who basically just like went on a camping trip because she needed a mental health day. I do support mental health days for Alicent Hightower, though. If she'd been doing that all along, maybe she wouldn't be in this sitch. The dragons at the end were fantastic, but I think I got a little bogged down on my first watch by like reader expectations, because the Red Sewing in the book has a lot more than two dragons. There are like, I want to say seven dragons involved in it. So it is a much broader sort of event. After that first watch, going back and revisiting it, I think this episode is phenomenal. I think it is easily the best dragon stuff in the Game of Thrones franchise. And it is, I did check this today, it is minute for minute, like screen time wise, the episode of House of the Dragon with the most dragons on screen. That's probably true for Game of Thrones as well. So this episode set a record. It's like almost 10 minutes of dragons on screen. What did you think, Dan?
Okay. I have a lot of thoughts, because I want to address something. In our comments, we have some polarized stuff right now. You guys are commenting great. Love it. Yes. Love to see the enthusiasm. But I've seen a bunch of, like, Julie said she loved it. So at least someone else said they loved it. I think Richard said a lot of action. Not a battle, but a lot of action. We also have folk saying they hate it. We have, has been a disappointment. We have, you guys are commenting too fast for me to read all of it. But I know there were several, I loved
but
it.
But don't stop.
Several, I hate it. Yes, Natalie loved it. But Natalie works here, so she can't be trusted. I feel I have a couple of thoughts. I feel like last episode, something changed. Somebody here said that, and before I go any further, I will say I did like this quite a bit. I definitely enjoyed the episode. I enjoyed this one and the last one a lot. I'm loving the battles in the comments. We had Julie say she liked Daemon scenes this time. I also like Daemon scenes, at least a lot more than I usually do.
That Oscar Tully scenes.
We have a fandom divided at this point. I think something flipped last week. I agree that the season has been slow. I'm not prepared to call the season a disappointment yet. I think the finale looks actually pretty good. If you've seen the trailer, watch it. It's worth it. And I've been liking the last two. The Battle of Rooks Rest was great. We had some good stuff early on. I really like the second episode. I will admit, though, I have been let down by this season at several points. And I agree with whoever said, you guys are commenting so fast, I can't keep up. I agree with whoever said that this episode feels like it should have been 5 or 6. I fully agree with that. I feel like the show slackened the pace, and I have my theories about why that happened. Quite a bit. I think you probably could have mashed together those first 3 episodes into 2 and the last 3 into 2, even more so, frankly. And I wish it got a move on. I am liking it a lot more these past 2. And this one, I think, had some really, really good stuff. I am loving the battles. So why don't... Yeah. What was my other thought? I'm sure I got other ones. Chris says, good episode, but a bad penultimate episode. I think that is part of the problem. Because the season has moved so, I'll use the nice word, deliberately, instead of slowly, it has put itself in a situation where it's hard to see how it can have another giant climax. That matters. I'm sorry. Like, we're watching TV. We're here for a build. We're here for step, 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 bang. And if there's only 8 and a few too many of them seem to have focused on kind of repeaty scenes that feel a little similar. The one I like to go to is in the one episode, Alicent pitching herself for Queen, being shot down and realizing that she's in a bad situation. And then the next one, Aemon firing her and realizing she's in a bad situation. I feel like there are some scenes this season that they could have you could have written this into one because you're kind of hitting the same point.
Sure.
I have complaints. I have liked the last one a lot. I love that riot scene. And I like this one a lot. I agree with folk who are saying it paid off stuff. I really liked the way that the early part of the season introduced these Dragonseed characters, Hugh Hammer, who's played by Kieran Boo from Warrior, and Ulf White, who's played by a man. Tom Bennett, thank you. And Adam of Hull, played by Clinton Liberty, who is a great name. And how we kind of got to know them just glancingly, and now they kind of come to the fore and they don't feel like they're inserted. I do feel like the show could give its characters more personality in the dialogue department, but I am enjoying that bubbling up. Like, I really liked Ulf White scene a lot. I like to laugh.
Me too.
So I really, really enjoyed the scene where they're trying to convince him, like, hey, Rhaenyra wants dragon riders. You got to go. You've been talking about this for years. And he's like, yeah, well, the thing is, my ACL's torn. I really can't go do that because I have like a back thing and I can't. And they're like, dude, you got to. You'll never live it down if you stay here.
We've been buying you drinks for years.
Yeah. off these stories. So I really liked that. And I liked, I mean, of course, I loved the final bit. I loved the sowing of the seed scene. I thought that was really, really exciting. And pick it apart. Like, I can pick it apart. Sometimes I do wonder how intentional the show is. Like, Rhaenyra is telling all these dragon seeds, who are these Targaryen bastards who are summoned to who she puts out the call, come to Dragonstone, we'll give you a dragon. I wish they had made more of a point of saying, like, and we'll give you lands and titles. I wish that. And I thought it was funny how she gives her little stump speech saying, like, we can end the war and peace will return without bloodshed. Now here, the lot of you go face this dragon. Good luck. Bye. And just kind of goes up. And I wonder if they're want me to think she's being a little God complex hypocritical, or if they don't. And if they want me to hear her talk about peace and accept that's what she means, and then don't think about how she's putting these people in a really bad position. Although they did volunteer, I guess.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy and Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster.
That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Yeah, I think that was really intentional. I think that this episode is kind of met. Hey, Savannah, great to see you in the chat. What'd you think of the episode? I thought that this, it was really intentional with Rhaenyra, where she's giving this speech and she does say, like, if you survive this, like, there's a good chance you won't survive. If you do survive, you'll be changed. If you don't survive, you'll be dead. But there are a few lingering shots, like, while all the dragon seeds are getting just chomped on and melted, literally melted on screen, where it's just like a long lingering shot on Rhaenyra. And, like, mild spoiler here, but Rhaenyra is going to she's going to have to do some bad shit throughout the Dance of the Dragons. Like, that is the character. Like, that is kind of the trajectory she has. So I felt like this was a really great way to start. We got that a little bit last episode where she's dressing a little more like Visenya. She's slapping around Bartimos Celtigar. And then in this episode, she's putting all these people out onto this pedestal in front of Vermithor, knowing full well there's a good chance a bunch of them are going to die. So I did think that was really intentional. I thought they played that really well for Rhaenyra. I think, you know, the dragon seed stuff, it's interesting. Like, my hope after seeing this, because I do agree with people who are saying, like, you know, this didn't feel like the penultimate episode. Like, they wished that there were more episodes type things. I do think that this season is illustrating that, like, a show like this really does benefit from a 10 episode season, like, full stop. There's just no way around it. Even though they have big event episodes with lots of budget and special effects and things like that, there's just something about the pacing of a 10 episode season that works a little bit better for this story. I hope that they don't rush storylines. So, like, I realized when I looked at the sewing, it's kind of written as a montage where it's like all these people mounted dragons and then Rhaenyra had a bunch of dragons, but like, they obviously didn't all do it in one day, in one sitting. Like, Nettles fed a dragon sheep for like a week or two until it said, "Hey, sure, you can ride me." So what we saw in this episode is really like the first paragraph of the sewing. So I hope that over time we get to see more of the material from that, because it's not like they skipped it. We didn't even get there really technically yet. We just got that first little bit where it says, and Vermithor and Ulf took new riders. So yeah, I loved a lot of stuff this episode. The Daemon stuff I thought was really great. Lara Strong, we should probably talk about at some point. Really interesting episode for Lara
Strong. I want to say a little more about the final dragon scene, because it was the highlight.
Yeah,
it was just a really, really fun action scene. And you're right. In the book, it's different. It's more of a montage. I expected that. Yeah. I will say, I do think this show has pretty much tossed off the book. I mean, so many things. It's following the outline, but the particulars are pretty much all different. My stance is, I don't mind as long as I'm entertained. And the scene of 100 flaxen, blonde-haired Targaryen bastards trying and failing to convince a dragon to like them was entertaining. And the best moment really has to be Hugh Hammer, Kieran Boo of Warrior fame. Finally just standing up to the dragon, just saying, like, do it, I'm ready. And then that being what the dragon kind of responds to, that's good. It shows some character. I think the show struggles with showing character sometimes. And that was a great
and kind that's of all guttural... one shot.
Oh, wow.
That whole long shot of Hugh from when he stumbles out in front of Vermithor on the ground to that scene where Vermithor comes down in front of him, that's all one shot. It's incredible. Nice. The cinematography in this episode was incredible.
Yes. Especially that whole last scene. I also love Kieran Boo because I like Warrior a lot. And yeah, that was a great moment.
Great.
I liked Ulf too. Dude, I really liked
Ulf. Ulf is fantastic.
Hollering and whooping over King's Landing. That was really fun.
Yeah.
And this, sometimes I think this show is missing fun. Like, Game of Thrones always was throwing in jokes. Game of Thrones is always, as dark as it got, it was always tossing in asides, quips, jokes. There's less of that in this show. So somebody like Ulf, again, I love the little, I can't claim a dragon, my ACL is torn scene. And then I loved him losing control of Silverwing. They like Silverwing, by the way. And just kind of going like, woohoo, over King's Landing. That was a lot of fun. And by the way, somebody asked, why did Aemon turn around? I think it was because he saw there were a lot of dragons there. Like, Vhagar's huge, but he can't take on four dragons. He can't take on Seasmoke, Eryx, Cyrax, Vermithor, and Silverwing. Look at the names I know. So that's why I saw that.
Yeah,
I saw a couple folk talking about that. That did not strike me as odd.
Yeah.
I know that Federica, who does our book versus show analysis, wondered that too. And my interpretation was he flew out there trying to see who this was. He didn't know who it was.
Yes.
And he chased it back to Dragonstone. And then he saw, oh, that's like four of them. I don't care how big Vhagar is. I can't take them all right now. Let's get foe.
Yeah. I think even if he didn't actually see every single dragon that was there, I think he knows they all live there.
Yeah.
You know, like Aemond would know which dragons are on Dragonstone. Enough that he's not just going to fly Vhagar over Rhaenyra's stronghold where potentially all the dragons would be real mad to see him. I also want to just take a second here because we're talking about Hugh. I agree with you about the humor, and I actually rewatched a little bit of Thrones today because I was looking through screen times of dragons and stuff, and I was struck by that because, you know, Thrones has characters like Tyrion and Bronn who are basically there to be hilarious, like in most of their scenes. Like, they have drama too, but like they're the ones cracking jokes. And House of the Dragon doesn't really have many of those characters. We got it a little bit with Aegon at the beginning of this season, and I hope that Ulf becomes a presence like that too. He was great. But I wanted to so Fletcher Targaryen, you are wrong. Sorry about what you're saying about Hugh being Viserys and Daemon's brother and Jacerys' son. That is incorrect. So Hugh, basically, Hugh's parentage, let's take a second and break it down. He told his wife that his mother was the sister of Viserys and Daemon's father. So essentially, his mother is Viserys and Daemon's aunt. She worked in a pleasure house, so she was a whore who Hugh was ashamed of her. And if you look at Fire and Blood, there is really only one child of Jacerys the Conciliator who fits that description, and that is Sarah Targaryen. She was banished essentially for causing like the single largest scandal of Jacerys's rule. His mother said he is just as much of a Targaryen as her brother's children. Yeah, because Sarah was the ninth born son, Baelon, who is Viserys and Daemon's father, I think was the second born. He was the heir to the throne for a while. So, and this totally fits with Sarah's like personality in the book. She's wicked entitled. Yeah. She would totally go into exile and then tell her bastard son, like, you're just as much, you know, you should have as much right to the throne as, you know, the heir to the throne's kids. Like, she's a real one. That's a new detail. That's not from the book. So Hugh and Ulf are not mentioned at all before they ride the dragons in the book. So all of this stuff with Sarah, like, I thought that was brilliant. I loved that as just a, you know, a little Easter egg, you know, rather than just Hugh's like, I think I had a Targaryen parent. It's like, let's give him an interesting Targaryen parent.
They went more specific than I thought.
Figure that out.
I just how you use the word pleasure house, the euphemism for brothel, but you don't use a euphemism for whore. You just spit that one out.
Correct.
I think that's funny. I think it's funny.
Pleasure house, that's specific wording. So it's pleasure garden in the book and it's pleasure house in the show. That's intentional. Okay. Do we want to talk about Larys next? Is there something else you want to talk about next?
No,
so
because
I thought Larys, he was making moves this episode. Telling what's his face, Jasper Wilde, not to tell Aemond about the rumor that Seasmoke found a new rider, which is kind of one undermining Aemond, but also like he heard it from a guy who heard it from a guy whose uncle heard it from a guy. So Jasper Wilde, I think, was trying to get Larys to give the information, and then if it didn't pan out, Larys would take the fall, was kind of the implication. Yeah. But Larys also, I don't know if, tell us if you caught this in the chat. So with Aegon, with his scenes where he was like trying to walk and stuff, the maester said like he should be abed, and Larys basically revealed like it was Larys's order that Aegon should be trying to walk, but then he played it off like he came in to help, so he's basically making Aegon dependent on him. What did you think of that? What an interesting...
I loved it. Once again,
tactic.
Aegon had one scene and it was great. Aegon's been my favorite from the beginning, I think in part because he does bring in some like other energy level. And also Tom Glenn Carney, the actor, absolutely murdering it, like trying to stalk across the floor, like crying in pain the whole way. It's so good. He's emoting so much with all that gnarly ass makeup on. And you're right, Larys is getting a lot of layers. The past two episodes, Larys has been coming to the fore. Because again, House of the Dragon, I always like catching us in problems. It has a bit of an issue with character depth comes slowly, it seems like. Kristen finally got some this season. I felt like it was a little late. Like Hugh and Ulf and Adam are finally getting some, which I felt could have been a little sooner. Larys is finally getting some, like this kind of a master manipulator who burned his own family inside Harrenhal is taking pity on this fellow disabled person and helping them walk or throwing his lot in with them. I mean, I think it's partly genuine.
Yeah.
And it's partly he knows that Aemon doesn't like him. So I will kind of put my lot in with Aegon, the other power who technically is still king. It was a good scene.
A king who will be completely in my debt, basically, too. A king who's going to feel real good about me after this.
Yes. It was a good scene because of the layers, and it's a good scene because Tom Glenn Clarney is really, really good as Aegon. I'm sad we only have one more episode because I want to see more of his arc. I want to see him keep evolving. He's gone on the biggest journey this season. Like, he started out as this kind of callow brat king who didn't know what he was doing, and now he turned into something completely different. You still see him in there, but he's different. Yeah. He's injured. He's broken. He's trying to get back. Who knows what he's thinking? Oh, I just really like Aegon a lot. And I love the actor. They've been doing a wonderful job with him. He is the one part of this season I have been A-pluses across the board for.
Yep. Would not change a thing about Aegon Targaryen this season. And it makes sense that they would give him such a great material, you know, especially in his first four episodes, because that's all the time we're going to get with Aegon looking like that, being the king. Yeah. Like, his life's going to be real different from here on out. Fletcher asking, is Larys related to Alys Rivers? Alys give some powers to Larys because he was a crippled boy like Bran? I don't think he's related to Alys. No. We did get an Easter egg in, I think, the last episode that's a member of House Strong was accused of sorcery because Larys was born with a crippled leg. So is that Alys who was accused of sorcery? Well, seems plausible, but we don't know. Speaking of relations, though, this is an interesting thing that I thought about this episode. Larys is related to Jace. So Jace, what did you think of Jace's... Larys was, Larys' brother Harwin Strong was Jace's father. So what did you think of, which makes Larys his uncle, technically. what do you think of Jace having his kind of breakdown of, you know, I am a bastard, but I'm also the heir to the throne. And people don't get to question that too much because I have a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
But you're trying to take that away from me, Mom. Now all the other bastards will have dragons too. What did you think of that?
Excellent question, because I saw some people in here complaining that Jace is a whiner, a crybaby. I'm getting a polarized reaction there, like to a lot of things House of the Dragon. Personally, I think that was the most emotional I got during the episode. I mean, highlight is it worked for me because it took it back to the start. Like, we know that from season one, we know that Jace probably knows he's a bastard, but he doesn't verbalize it, and that it's a deep point of insecurity for him. And I bought this. I bought it welling up in this moment, and him feeling afraid that he's going to lose what he does have. I think he might be catastrophizing a little bit if he thinks his mother's going to choose some random wine sink with silver hair to replace him. But I did buy the anxiety. So yeah, I liked the scene quite a bit. I got emotional. Like that was the emotional high point of the episode for me. I thought it was good character drama. I do think it's worth noting that this is another example of the show, which I like pretty much completely breaking from the book, where Jace is pretty eager to support Alan and Adam of Hull, who are bastards being legitimized. So I do increasingly think it's, you've just got to treat this as its own thing, because they are very loosely adapting the book at this point. But I did buy the scene and I liked the scene for the character.
So I agree with what Natalie said on the Facebook chat. I interpreted it as more he was upset that once Rhaenyra dies, his claim could be challenged.
Oh, sure.
I think that's more it than like Rhaenyra will set him aside. Like, why will people choose to follow him if they have a bunch of other options with dragons?
Oh, that's good.
But this did feel like a bit of a break from Jace. From the source
break.
Material.
You can just say it's completely different.
It is completely different. And I liked the drama of it. I liked the, you know, it was a good moment for Harry Collett as Jace. I think him and Emma Darcy, was a great scene of the two of them. Our writer Federica talked about on Twitter today that House of the Dragon has this thing about making drama in some places where there wasn't any in the book, because, you know, the book is presented kind of like a textbook, so it has to make things more dynamic, and sometimes that works better than others. And the sowing of the seeds is an interesting one for this, because in the book, Jace has the idea. Jace and this fool mushroom have the idea to put out the call to bastards. And there it makes sense that Jace wouldn't really mind it, because Jace knows he's a bastard. So it's like a different attitude toward that. And there's not this whole thing of like, where do we find Targaryen bastards? Like, let's get him from King's Landing. This is a lore thing that it does bother me a little bit the show didn't do, but I liked how they handled things with Hugh and Ulf. I think that is a good enough substitute that I'm not too upset. But in the book, Targaryen bastards are widely known to live on Dragonstone.
Oh, yeah.
Dragonstone had this, lots of kingdoms did this thing called the First Night, which is basically when you got married, the lord you owed fealty to could sleep with your wife on the first night of your marriage. And on Dragonstone in particular, people actually didn't really mind it that much, because they viewed Targaryens as almost like gods. So that's where the whole dragon seed thing comes from, was if you got pregnant from a Targaryen sleeping with you on the first night, your child was a dragon seed. So it's much less of a mystery and like a, how do they arrive at this conclusion that it could be bastards? But I think generally they've done a good job of stoking the drama. And I think the payoff in this scene with Vermithor and Silverwing already caring about Ulf and Hugh. Yeah, I think it was really worth the trade-off there. Because that's going to be one of the most memorable scenes of the season, easily, I think.
Well, I have three quick points. First, I just wanted to say on camera that Daniel Roman thinks the show should have kept in the thing where kings can sleep with whoever wives they want. So that's where Daniel Roman's priorities are at. Two...
Hey man,
I want to
say the world building George put in is good. That's all I'm saying.
Sickos. Second, I want to say that my train of thought is going right at the track. Second, I want to say that I liked that they added in this dimension where Rhaenyra and especially Jace are almost like prejudiced against the lower born people, which I do think makes sense.
Yeah.
I do wish that they got here faster. Like. There's no excuse for that. I still am wilding out that episode 5, the climactic ending scene, was Rhaenyra and Jace in a library getting an idea to do something later. That's I just don't think that's a good way to structure an episode. Third, I know several folk here are saying that it's bad that this was Jace's idea in the first place, and then to have him be upset about it. And I want to offer a little bit of a twisty critique on that. It was Jace's idea, or Jace and Rhaenyra together's idea, to look for Targaryen offshoots, like noble-born Targaryen offshoots, who would not represent a threat to Jace's claim as the son of Rhaenyra. Jace is only upset when they extend this to low-born bastards, which was not his idea. So I do not see an inconsistency there. Just FYI.
Agree. And he says that explicitly. If you go back and watch the scene where he's arguing with Rhaenyra in this episode, he does say that explicitly. I'm pretty sure she's like, this was your idea. And he was like, to get nobles. So yeah, I didn't view that as inconsistent at all. I think it makes sense, especially because, you know, finding bastards, it's a sore spot for Jace. It's really understandable why that would be a raw nerve. Whether he agrees with it or not, he's just gonna have complicated feelings about it.
Yeah, I enjoyed the scene. So yeah, I liked this episode. I mean, we'll see what happens in the finale, which we'll talk about in a minute. Let's get through a couple of other bits. We'll end with Daemon, like we enjoy to do.
That was gonna be
really
my
briefly.
Question.
Allison's scenes are fine, but a little dull. I mean, I don't know what else there is to say about them. She goes and has a walk in the woods and takes a swim in the lake. It was very obvious Ophelia from Shakespeare imagery with her in like the white shift kind of floating on the river, or the lake rather. And it was pretty and it was nice. And Allison were in her head. I wish the show would embrace what Game of Thrones did and just, you know, you can just not have a character in an episode sometimes. Like Jon Snow, Daenerys Targaryen, Tyrion Lannister, they all sat episodes out. Arya Stark, Sansa Stark, everybody did not appear in every single episode every season. Sometimes they skipped it. And I feel like House of the Dragon has this rule where you can't go an episode without checking in with Rhaenyra, Allison, or Daemon. And I think it's led to some problems. This was pretty mild. Like, okay, fine. She has a little bath in the Kingswood Lake. It didn't take that much time. Daemon's story? Maybe it would have been better if it wasn't all spaced out like this. So I have to like turn around in my chair and roll my eyes and sigh every time we go to Daemon because I know we're going to get another dream sequence. Like you. It would have been better if there was like all in one or two and he could take an episode off or something, because I hope they do that next season. You don't need to check in with every single person every single time. If Alice doesn't have something to do in this episode, just kind of, you know, leave her off screen for an episode. It's fine. We won't forget her. We know who she is. She wears green and she makes bad decisions. We know Alicent. So that was fine. Yes. That was my take on those.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. This was... You know, even though I always love seeing Olivia Cooke, this was absolutely an episode where I was like, we could have got just that one scene with Allison. We could have got no scenes with Allison. There were other places we could have used the time more, like Adam of Hall or any of the very exciting stuff that was like, there were a lot of, more with Adam and Corlys. That was what I really, really wanted out of this episode, more than like Allison in the forest. And thankfully, it was only a little bit of Allison in the forest, so it wasn't that big a deal. But I do agree with what you're saying, that the show, like, it does feel like it makes a point of, it can leave some characters off screen, but not Allison, Rhaenyra, or Daemon. They have Otto Hightower. He comes and goes. And I'm so glad that they have stuck to that, because that is kind of Otto's trajectory in the book as well. Like, he is in King's Landing and he gets fired and he goes back and forth a lot. So Otto does spend a lot of time off screen. I really hope he shows up next episode at the head of an army of 100 cats. Cause that's a neat little thing. They cut, Allison complaining about rats in the castle, in the book. Otto gets like 100 cats to replace the rat catchers. But one thing, so I had two thoughts about Allison. One is, I liked getting a little bit of Rickard Thorne, who is her Kingsguard guy who is with her.
Okay.
This was probably the most we've gotten of him all season in close-ups. He is an actor from One Piece. He plays Admiral Garp, Monkey D. Luffy's, I think, father, uncle, some relative in One Piece. He's also, Rickard Thorn is a distant relative of Alistair Thorn. So cool to see from Game of Thrones. Cool to see some of those little things. They're some of the only named members of House Thorn kind of in the entire mythos. The other thought I had with Alicent is that it's kind of funny. So the whole reason this scene happened, it's not because they needed it to happen. It's because Olivia Cook basically said, I really want to leave the castle this season. Everyone is going and shooting in fun places. Can I please leave the castle this season? She talked about, she did a preseason interview where she basically said, I asked them to write me at least a scene because I was losing it being in the castle all the time. And that, like, it's kind of funny because that's what the scene is. It, like, Allison is like, I really just need to go for a walk. So life imitating art, I guess there.
Yeah, that's super. I guess I'd just be like, Ryan Condal, sometimes you have to say no. Just, but it was fine. Wasn't that bad. Let's talk about Damon. Yeah. Let's round this out there. Okay, I'll say this. Easily the best scene he's had at Harrenhal Hall since the beginning, because it actually happened. I have fully not agreed. Liked the Damon plot this season. I feel like it's been a holding pattern. I feel like we seem to get the same thing over and over. It's, again, completely opposite of the book, where Damon kind of rolls in and rolls over the Riverlands and puts down the Brackens, and all the lords come to his side without much of a fuss, and they put in all these obstacles that just didn't feel like they rang true to me. They felt like they were there for their own sake. And then I really got tired of those dream sequences, man, because I don't think they really say anything we didn't already know in a way that's really interesting. This one might have been the worst, actually, when he goes in and sees old King Viserys, and the king is literally like, I never wanted the throne. Do you still want it? Like, what's the point of having subtext if you're just going to make it text? Like, why are you doing this? So I'm very tired of those. I at least like that the lords got together and apparently they decided to move forward. He killed Willem Blackwood, and now he has an army, so he accomplished something. I don't think it's fun or entertaining to spend five episodes with someone who tries and fails and fails and fails and fails. I don't really care if they're trying to give us a message about his internal turmoil. I don't care what the intention is. It's boring to watch, and I think that should be a big consideration. And I don't feel like it was enough. I feel like it could have been solved if they just let him off. If I think he just should have rolled over the Riverlands, done some conquering stuff, maybe had some misgivings, some talks with Alice, talked to Simon Strong, maybe a dream sequence or two to make him rethink murdering a child on someone else's orders anyway, to get some identity crisis. This felt stretched out to me. I did not like it. I wish it no glad tidings on its birthday, and I'm glad it's over.
So I have not...
I did like Oscar Tully, like, as Rockers Los Angeles says. He was fine.
Yeah, Oscar Tully was great. Loved Oscar Tully. I think Archie Barnes is the name of that actor. He did a fantastic job. I think, so I've enjoyed some of Damon's dream sequences throughout this season. I do think that they have been overdone. And I think the way that that really hits home for me is because I wasn't really that excited to see Patty Considine either last episode or this episode. Even though I love Patty Considine, the fact that I wasn't, like, when Millie Alcock first showed up and that first dream sequence, I gasped, I shouted at my TV. And then when Patty showed up, it was like, oh, of course, this is the Patty episode. We're near the end of Viserys's or Damon's, you know, emotional arc of going through his psychology. Yeah, I do think they dragged it out.
Diminished quickly.
Exactly. And I think this episode in particular, all of the stuff in the Godswood was great. You know, we can argue a little bit about, like, you know, you said Damon's failing constantly, and here he's getting outmaneuvered by a child, failing yet again. But it was still a really compelling scene, and it gave me Game of Thrones vibes, you know, Oscar Tully passing judgment on Willem Blackwood, being very honest, like, yeah, he told you to do the bad thing, but you did it worse than you needed to because you wanted to do the bad thing even worse. So I really liked all of that. But then for Daemon to then leave and then find old King Viserys in his room, I felt like it would have been a more effective scene just with like a lingering shot on Daemon's face, half in shadow, staring out a window, than seeing Viserys. Especially because last episode, when he comforts Viserys in his dream, and then Sir Simon Strong wakes him up, that's the first time we actually see Daemon waking up in real life since he got to Harrenhal. Every other time he jumps awake from a dream, he's in the dream, or it's fading between realities. But that scene, he's woken up after like making peace with Viserys in his dream. I thought that would have been a beautiful way to end it. And bringing Viserys back this episode undermined that. So yeah I really, this was probably my favorite Daemon episode in a while, but I did, that is one of the things where I felt like we didn't really need that. We could have used the time elsewhere and it would have been more effective probably. Yeah.
I loved last week watching you convince yourself that because Daemon woke up, the dream sequences were over. And I was like, Daniel, you don't even know.
It felt perfect.
I had no faith that would happen.
I think, I do think production-wise, there's a reason this happened. And I hope this is a thing the show learns from. One, they wanted to bring back actors from season one for guest appearances. I don't blame them. And this is a cool way to do it if they did it with a little more moderation. Two, they had the Harrenhal set. And once they put a lot of effort into building that set, they wanted to come up with a storyline to use it a lot. The Witcher made this exact same mistake in season two of The Witcher with Kaer Morhen, which only appears briefly in that part of the book. They made up an entire storyline just because they had the set. And I do think we got a little bit of that with Daemon and Harrenhal in this season as well.
I mean, I don't want to get too off track, but I'm not a producer on the show. I'm not a writer. I'm not an executive. I'm not David Zaslav. But okay, the show's going to go around for a while. Harrenhal sticks around. You'll get more use out of it. Don't worry. Yep. Okay, really quick. I think Chris said that the veil scene was a waste of time. I disagree with that. I mean, the veil scene was a setup scene. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Rhaena ran off to, I assume, go find the dragon, commonly referred to as Sheep Stealer, and then we'll see what happens with her next week. I don't mind some setup scenes in an episode. That's fine. Yeah. They just can't be all setup scenes. Like, episode 5 was like, okay, is anything going to pay off? We have 2 minutes left. Sure, Rhaena runs away from the train to go find a dragon. We'll see what happens next week. That's fine. Because
those guards are doing a real bad job.
Well, I don't know.
The guards who just let her run away.
She was at the back. Because episode, we got like the giant dragon seed Vermithor confrontation. We got Hugh and Ulf claiming things. We got Ulf riding above King's Landing. We got great Aemon stuff. Like, Aemon, by the way, I don't think he has a single line that like is like clear. Man, just his presence is good. Like just him like looking out of the window, seeing Silverwing up there and just like taking action, running down there on the horse. He's an exciting character. There was a lot of payoff this episode, so I'm perfectly fine with one setup scene. No problem.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was fine with the veil scene. I do feel like we wasted the veil a little bit. I wanted a little bit more out of Jane Arryn, partially because I really like that actress, but also because Jane Arryn's got like a couple of really cool lines in the book. And part of me is like, I wish we'd gotten a little bit more of Jane Arryn. I didn't mind the setup at all. That excites me because I want to see what's going to happen with it next week. I'm still not totally sold on Rhaena claiming Sheep Stealer. She may find Sheep Stealer, but I'm going to remain delusional for another week.
after the whole dream thing? Okay. I hope it pays off.
Yeah, I'm going to remain delusional right down to the end. And I agree with you about Aemond. He does have a great presence. Cool detail in that scene that Tessarion Darren Targaryen's dragon has apparently taken wing, meaning she's ready to be flown into battle. So I don't know if you said you thought you might have even seen Tessarion in the trailer for next week.
It had to be. Dude, the trailer, I will say this. I've been worried about the finale because it's been such a slow burn. And I know there are big events coming up that they probably can't get to. I will say the trailer looked lit. Like there are a lot of shots of armies on the move. It's definitely Tessarion flying above the Hightower army. You see the Hightower army. I'm trying to think will show up at all this season. You see the Winter Wolves with the twins on the march. You see the Tully banners finally raved. It means there's like armies. You see the Valyrian fleet. You see a Triarchy scene. Helena Targaryen gets asked to ride her dragon Dreamfire. Aemon's like, you got to do it. Aemon burns a place. The dragon sees her all at dinner. Like, I don't know. Syrax flying to Harrenhal, it looked like, is what I'm guessing that was. Things get energy from movement and change. And I felt like while there have been some high points this season, there were too many episodes. Things were kind of in a holding pattern. Like those first three of before the Battle of Rook's Rest, what I kind of repeated over and over, like, we have to try and avoid the war. We're trying to avoid the war. We have to try and avoid the war. And there was just not enough movement on from that. And then episode five was, I don't know, just a lot of setup and not much payoff. And it was great to see just a lot of pieces moving around. Like, that's what I want to see in a season about war. I want to see that. I wish there was more of that. But I'm looking forward to the finale because it looks pretty lit.
Me too. I think at the end of the day, like, this was a really good episode. I think it did some really, really cool things that this show has never done. Give them an Emmy for sound design, please. The dragon's sound design was unbelievable. It gives me chills every single time I watch that scene. How the dragons, they really took their time with the sounds. They make different sounds. Like, Silverwing sounds identifiably different from Vermithor, who sounds very different from Syrax, who sounds very different from Seasmoke. I love that. It's insane. But I think the feeling I got from this episode, so this is like the red sewing, these dragons getting claimed. Mm-hmm. All season, I think a lot of book readers have been making predictions about the natural endpoints in the narrative that would make sense for season ending. And that's reasonable because, you know, that's what we have. We have the source text to look at and be like, well, obviously, these scenes that were very large scenes in the book would make sense for the end of a season. Or, you know, this one scene in King's Landing is the end of a chapter, obviously would make sense for a season ending. Mm-hmm. I think it is going to be interesting to see because, you know, we know that a large battle scene got moved to next season, presumably the Gullet. How this show finds its own sort of pacing through the seasons. And I would rather them take their time so that the overall story across all seasons is really good than like try to cram events so that they get the biggest finale possible in one season and then rush other events. Ideally, they would just get 10 episodes and they could do it all. But if they have to choose, I don't know. I'm cautiously very, very optimistic for next week after seeing the trailer. I think it's going to be a real good time.
A lot will depend on it. And we'll be here talking all about it. By the way, the sound designer of the show is Paula Fairfield. She is pretty brilliant. She does the dragon sounds for Game of Thrones, Abraham House of the Dragon. She does a great, great job. Kudos to Paula Fairfield. Yeah. Keep up the good work. All right. One episode left, people. We will be here next Sunday, right after the season finale of House of the Dragon airs, to break it down, to give you our insights, our analyses, and our feelings. We will tell you whether it's good or not, and then you will know what to think. I am Dan Selke. This is Daniel Roman. And I just want to remind you that our word is law, and we'll see you soon. Goodbye.
Have a good night, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right.
When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.